West Side Story is a musical vision of immigrant America played out in New York City. But the vision was born, as was its composer, Leonard Bernstein, just north of Boston in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Lawrence was the first stop on the way to the American dream for thousands of immigrants to the U.S., including Bernstein's parents. The family was drawn from Russia by the boom created by the huge textile mills of the first planned industrial city in America, built on the banks of the Merrimack River. By the late 20th century, though, the dream had died. The mills were mostly shuttered, and Lawrence had become one of the poorest cities in the nation. But as Living on Earth's Bruce Gellerman reports, this relic of the Industrial Revolution is now trying to remake itself for the new century using green technology.
This is a tale of three cities, Lawrence, Massachusetts' past, present, and future. You can see all three from the rooftop vantage point of an old mill building.
This is the challenging part of the tour.
Real estate developer Bob Anson leads the way up a nearly vertical wood ladder to the top of the six-story mill.
But I promise you it's well worth the climb and your reward.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this.
From here, you can see Lawrence was built for greatness. In the center is a proper New England common surrounded by Victorian mansions, and the streets laid out in a perfect grid. A bald eagle soars overhead, and a falcon swoops along the banks of the Merrimack River as it flows through Lawrence east to the Atlantic.
They say in real estate the three most important things are location, location, location. Show me a better location. I'll tell you, there aren't any.
The mighty Merrimack River is why the city's founders chose this spot. They came to Lawrence to create an urban industrial city based on the latest technology. The Great Stone Dam, constructed in 1847, harnessed the Merrimack. At the time, it was the longest dam in the world. The water provided the energy to run more than 20 massive textile mills that rose along the riverbanks. The clock tower atop Air Mill is the largest of its kind in America. And right next door is the wood mill. When it was built in 1906, the huge red brick building was nicknamed the Eighth Wonder of the World. It was the largest textile plant on the planet. 4 years ago, developer Bob Anson bought the old wood mill and renamed it Monarch on the Merrimack.
If you were to take the Monarch on the Merrimack building and tip it on end, this would be the tallest building in the world. So we look at this as a horizontal skyscraper.
The old mill is 1,600 feet long and contains 1.3 million square feet. But except for some warehousing, the place has been empty for years. The mill is run down. So is Lawrence. The unemployment rate is twice as high, and incomes half the state average. The old wood mill is a metaphor for the city.
When I started this business, people would tell me, what would you want with an obsolete white elephant in a city like Lawrence? And my response is, the only thing obsolete is thinking, and the fact that we economically can't produce textiles here eliminates one of a million potential reuses for a building such as this.
Anson is turning the white elephant into a huge green energy project, morphing the mothballed wood mill into Monarch on the Merrimack. There'll be 600 luxury condos, a jazz club, a restaurant cafe, and retail shops. Around the construction site are signs that read, Green People Wanted.
We decided, if we're going to bring this building back, let's bring it back in a way that minimizes the impact on the environment, and let's respond to the people who are coming here to buy condos. These are people who grew up in the 60s and 70s who want to live their ideals.
To fulfill that vision and make it commercially viable to heat and cool the enormous mill building, all factors pointed in one direction, straight down. In the parking lot between the Merrimack River and the old mill building, workers drill into the earth.
This right now, I believe, is the largest privately funded geothermal project in the United States.
Matthew Bavenzi is president of Commonwealth National Drilling. He and his workers are boring the first of 60 wells, each 1,500 feet deep into the granite below. According to federal officials, a geothermal exchange system like this one is the most efficient and environmentally friendly way to heat and cool a building. Matt Bavenzi says it's the best way on Earth because it uses the Earth. If you've ever walked into a cool basement on a hot day, you know how geothermal exchange works.
Essentially, if you think of the ground as it's the thermal mass is so large, it relatively stays at a constant temperature. At about 5 feet down to 1,500 feet, you can expect the ground temperature to be about 53, 54 degrees Fahrenheit. So the idea is that if you take the heat load or the cooling load from a building and pump that into the ground, that the ground's temperature is going to stay constant, so you can regulate what temperature your building would be just by the temperature of the ground.
So what you do is, let's say in the summer, you've got hot water that you kind of comes out of the building, it goes into the ground, then it comes out much cooler.
Exactly. And essentially, if the building is 80 degrees and you know the ground's 54, over time, you just keep pumping the 80-degree temperature into the ground will cool that down, and then you bring the net difference, the cooling effect, back into the building, which will drop the building's temperature.
And in the winter, you reverse the process.
Exactly.
Monarch on the Merrimack's geothermal exchange system is expected to save condo owners about 30% on their heating and cooling costs. The only fossil fuels used are to run the pumps and compressors. Bob Anson says you'd have to plant a forest with 600 acres of trees to derive the same benefit to the environment as the project will save in terms of global warming gases. And on top of the building, next to the penthouse lofts, which may have solar panels, Anson plans to build a 7,000-square-foot green roof,
which will have trees and have plants and have grasses, specially built to hold water as much as possible.
That will help prevent sewers on the ground from overflowing into the Merrimack River and keep the building cooler. But Anson's project isn't just about protecting the environment for the future. It's also about preserving the past. The mill building may be empty today, but it's filled with history.
The wood mill was a modern, for its time, a very modern place.
Patricia Jasane is executive director of the Lawrence History Center. She says the city lies at a critical junction in American industrial, cultural, and technological history. It's where the American labor movement was born.
When I was a boy working in the mill, never dreamed of a day the wheel was still. Thought the work in the weaving room went on forever.
By the turn of the 20th century, mill owners who had started as urban idealists had become cold-hearted industrialists.
When the word came up from the Lawrence Mill that the strike was on, the three men were killed. I said there'd be more to pay before the day was over.
Hundreds of thousands of workers came from Ireland and Italy, Eastern Europe and the Middle East to work the mills. Lawrence became known as Immigrant City, a place of squalid tenements and horrendous factories.
When the river turns the wheel, money in your pocket and you got a good deal. Back down another when the company fails, the river turns the wheel. The river turns the wheel. The river turns the wheel.
With all the mills, you had the same kind of conditions. You had the machinery, which was incredibly loud.
Construction workers converting Wood Mill into Monarch on the Merrimack recently found these old recordings of mill workers and weaving machines.
The machine would start up, you know, it would start, and it might have like a humming noise. It wasn't like the weave room. The weave room was... Oh, my God.
25,000 people worked in the mills. Most were women. Many were children, some as young as 7 years old.
It was very dangerous work. Injury was very, very common, as well as illness from the working conditions of the dust that would build up.
A third of the workers died before they were 25. In the winter of 1912, a new Massachusetts law went into effect, cutting the work week from 56 to 54 hours. Mill owners responded by speeding up the looms. The workers, 20,000 strong, went on strike. The Lawrence Mill owners struck back, with goon squads beating up workers. The National Guard was called in. For 3 months, the workers held fast, demanding bread, increased wages, and roses, respect.
From birth until life closes, heart's on us
The Bread and Roses strike was a turning point in the American labor movement, and the wood mill was at its epicenter. Developer Bob Anson.
90-odd years ago, had we been in this spot, in this mill, on this floor, you would be seeing workers sabotaging their machines. You would be seeing people from 50 countries speaking 50 languages marching along this hallway, convincing their co-workers to also sabotage the machine and join the strike, as well they did.
In the end, the mill owners met the workers' demands. But at the end of World War II, textile manufacturers pulled the plug on Lawrence's mills, moving machinery and jobs to the south, then overseas, draining the lifeblood out of the city. For a while, mainframe computers were manufactured in Wood Mill. Then that technology became obsolete too, and companies again left Lawrence. Unemployment soared. In the 1990s, the city became known as the arson capital of the country. Lawrence was dying. That's the situation developer Bob Anson found when he arrived with his plan to turn historic Wood Mill into Monarch on the Merrimack, mindful of the past, but with one eye on the future and the other on the bottom line.
I didn't become a green developer through being an environmentalist. It's less risky and more profitable to use green technologies. I see this as smart business.
It's a double green bottom line, part of a growing trend, says housing consultant Ed Conley.
What I see is I think the financing side of this is starting to drive it.
Connolly is president of New Ecology. His firm helps developers design and build green, affordable housing projects. He says in recent years there's been a fundamental shift among large financial companies interested in backing geothermal and other renewable energy projects.
So it's a very big change. I've been doing this kind of work for 10 or 15 years, and 15 years ago, you talked about this to corporate people, and they looked at you like you were a crazy tree hugger, and now that's changing.
Conley says Monarch on the Merrimack is such a big geothermal project that if it's successful, it's bound to have a huge economic impact on Lawrence, Massachusetts, and serve as a model for other projects. Still, that's a big if.
In a real estate market, I mean, obviously it's very complex, and location, location, location is still the mantra, that people are not going to go way out of their way just to buy a green building. At least most people won't. But I think that in an increasingly competitive marketplace, that this is going to be one of the distinguishing characteristics of buildings.
That's what developer Bob Anson is banking on. His Monarch on the Merrimack project is a $200 million bet that by restoring one old mill building in Lawrence using green technology, he can help revitalize a city where hopes and fortunes once soared.
We came to Lawrence with a vision for how to bring a place that was built for one economic reality, how to bring it back for today's economic reality, and how to do it in a way so that my kids and my kids' kids will never find themselves in a position of having to say, gee, too bad it wasn't built sustainably.
Anson says there are still more than 13 million square feet of vacant mill space in Lawrence. That's more square footage than all of the football fields in the country combined. But the space is shrinking. Recently, Wind Development, one of the largest affordable housing developers in the country, announced plans to renovate 10 more mill buildings in the city. Using green technology, they'll put solar panels on the roofs and explore the possibility of hydroelectric power from a tributary of the mighty Merrimack, the river that flows through the city of Lawrence, Massachusetts, birthplace of the American Industrial Revolution, and perhaps reborn in the Green Revolution. For Living on Earth, I'm Bruce Gellerman.
When the river turns a wheel, money in your pocket and you got a good deal. Back down another when the company fails. The river turns a wheel. The river turns a wheel. The river turns a wheel.
Next week on Living on Earth, 30 years ago, naturalist George Schaller traveled to Tibet in search of the elusive snow leopard. Now Schaller has returned in search of another majestic beast.
In this seemingly barren country, we were surprised by how much wildlife we encountered and were delighted to count about 8,000 chiru. It was a hopeful sign for the future.
Return to Tibet with George Schaller next time on Living on Earth.